I hope this is being recorded. This is 2020. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and it's very lonely, and I'm going to give my life story. And I like to start out when I was in grammar school and living at 363 North 12th Street in Newark, New Jersey. I was going to First Avenue School, and going to First Avenue School at the age of 10. My mother had another child. The child was born with a broken arm, and they brought her home, brought him home, I'm sorry, and we had a little brother. I continued to go to school at First AMU. When I was at school, the teacher switched me from lefty to righty, and every time I tried to switch back to lefty, the teacher's name was Mrs. Red Clawson, and she would hit me on the hand and say, no, you have to use your right hand. Consequently, it hurt me very much because it became very slow in reading. My parents sent me for remedial reading in Rutgers and Newark, and even till this day, I have a problem. I can read very well and comprehend what I'm reading, but when I try to read out loud, it sounds like a two-year-old child reading. But I do very well on my own reading and comprehending what I'm reading. I went to grammar school, and when I was in 8th or 4th or 5th grade, the guy started to abuse me because I lived in a Catholic neighborhood and I was a Jew. And they used to beat me up all the time, and my father said, well, if they beat you up or take advantage, you go home and get a baseball bat and hit them. So one winter, we were sleigh riding, and Joe D'Angiro took my sled, and he wouldn't give it back to me. And he said, Jew, tell your rich parents to buy another one. This sled is mine. So I went home, got a baseball bat, went back, and hit him in the leg and broke his leg. Consequently, his father came to my house and wanted my father to pay for the hospitalization. And my father said to me, tell his father the story. So I began to tell him the story that he took my sled, didn't want to give it back, told me, Jew, you have a lot of money. Tell your parents to go buy you another one. His father smacked him in the head, took him home, and that was the end of that one. I also had to learn to fight because when I used to go to the candy store, they always wanted to get the Jewish boy and take his candy away. So I learned how to fight. And I also earned money myself. I started to deliver newspapers. And my mother used to get up early in the morning, help me fold the newspapers. And then I'd go out and deliver them, come home, and eat breakfast. When I was in the 7th or 8th grade, I liked this girl named Marie Cavallo. And I asked her if we could go to the movies. She said she'd have to talk to her parents. Well, she talked to her parents, and her parents said that we could go to the movies. Only thing is that we had to have a chaperone. And at that time, people would normally have their daughter chaperoned if you went out on a date. So we went out on a date, and we had her brother tag along to the movies. We had gone out a few more times, and we always had a chaperone. I got a little tired of that, and we broke it off. And a little after that, I liked another young lady, and her name was Doreen, and I asked her out, and we were going out without a chaperone, and we did very well until I graduated. When I graduated grammar school, my parents decided that this area was no good for me to grow up because they wanted me to meet girls of my own faith. And there was no girls of my own faith in that area. So we moved to 147 Wainwright Street into my grandmother and grandfather's house. My grandmother lived on the second floor, and we lived on a first floor. I started high school and I decided that I was going to go to vocational school, and I liked working on cars, and I was going to take up automotive. I consequently went to Irvington Tech and was studying automotive. In the meantime, living at Wainwright Street, my grandmother lived upstairs. My grandmother came from Russia. My grandfather came from Germany. My grandmother used to drink tea, and I always was amazed that she put hot tea in a glass, and she had a spoon in the glass. And I say, "Grandma, why do you have the spoon in the glass?" She said, "Zimala, son, why? I put the spoon in the glass so the glass don't crack when I put the hot water in." I learned a lesson. Also, my grandmother from the old country used to put cube sugar in her mouth and then sip the tea through the sugar, and she got the sweetness. My grandfather had cancer, and they had him home, and I can remember the day of his passing and me seeing him, and I'll never forget the sight of seeing my grandfather in his deathbed. It was a lasting experience for me because I love my grandfather. When I was a young boy, he used to put me on his shoulder and carry him around. And I love him till this day. I went all through Irvington Tech, and I graduated from Irvington, and my brother started to go to Irvington. And also, when we were going there, there was a young boy named Erwin Brodsky who was going there. But he was a little slow, and the kids used to take advantage of him. So he rode the bus with myself and go to school. And this fellow, Jerry Schneiderman, and myself became very good friends at school. And we would protect him. When we left high school, he had to quit high school because the kids would never let him alone. And it was a shame. There was nothing I could do. My brother was also taken advantage of at high school. And Jerry and I had to make a trip over to Irvington High and corner all the hard guys and told them if they kept it up that we would beat them up. So they stopped bothering my brother. And that was that for that part. When I graduated from high school. I got a job working for Bigelow Motors in Belleville as a mechanic. I went from Bigelow Motors in Belleville to County Auto Sales in Jersey City. And I stayed there until I bought my own business. But I have to regress a little bit by what I was saying. During that period of time, I joined the National Guard, and I used to go away for 2 weeks, and I had to go to a week to go away for basic training. They put me in the medics after my basic training. But being a young fellow wanting to have fun, I went out with the boys. We got drunk, didn't report back to duty. And when we did get back to duty, a couple days later, the officers said, no more for you in the medics, you're going to be a cook. So they sent me to be a cook. Now, could you imagine a mechanic with dirty hands being a cook? Well, one day I was cooking, and a lieutenant came up for an inspection. And mechanics get dirt implanted in their hands, and you just don't get them out by washing them. He said, let me see your hands. And he had a fit and said, how could this man be cooking with hands like that? But that didn't go anywhere. He reprimanded me. He reprimanded the first sergeant who's in charge of the cooks. They decided that they were going to send me to cook and baker school. When I was in cook and baker school, there was a cook, and it was the first time I encountered a man with an earring in his ear. And he said he was a first-class chef, that he had cooked in the White House and all over the world. He was in the Army now, and he was a teacher. And I asked him, Sergeant, how come every time we cooked ham, and the way they cooked ham in those days was, in the Army, that they boiled the ham in vinegar and water to get the salt out. Well, after boiling it, we took it out, and we put cloves, brown sugar, if we had pineapple, we put pineapple, oranges on it, and baked it. After baking it and then taking it out, we had to slice it. And when we go to slice it, it smelled. And I didn't like the smell from the ham. And I said to the sergeant, why do we get the smell? He said, do you debone it? I said, no. He said, well, you're getting the smell from the marrow and the bone. He said, go back and tell your mess sergeant that you bone the ham and you won't get the smell. I went back to the sergeant and said, I'm not the bone in the ham. You'll slice it the way it is and you'll put up with the smell. The oath, the other thing I didn't like in cooking was cleaning chickens. We used to pull the insides of the chicken out, and I detested that. And for a long time, I didn't eat chicken. For years, I didn't eat chicken. Also, whenever I would carve a turkey, because my father taught me how to carve a turkey, I wouldn't eat turkey until this day. If I cut a turkey or carve a turkey, whatever you want to call it, I do not eat the turkey. If I don't cut the turkey, I will eat the turkey. After being in the National Guard and working at Bigelow Motors, I met a fellow named Eddie Palancar, and he also liked automotive, and we talked about going into business. And I said that would be a good idea. But I kept working at Bigelow Motors. And then one day, a friend of mine said that they were going to go on a hayride. And he knew this girl, a friend of his girlfriend, Jerry, that would go on a hayride with me and I'd go on a blind date. I said, that would be fine. And I had bought a straw cowboy hat, picked up this young lady named Bonnie Strauss, and took her on a hayride. Well, she made a lasting impression. And after the hayride, I asked her out. And we start going together. And she lived on Fabian Place in Newark, and I lived on Wainwright Street. And then one day I said to my mother, you know, I really like this girl. I'd like to get engaged to her and ask her to marry me. And my mother said, okay, I'll take you to this jewelry store that we have friends in. And that friend had a store on Broadway in Bloomfield, and we went there and we bought a ring, and I proposed to Bonnie, and we consequently got married. Eddie and I, we kept talking about going into business, and we went into business and bought a gas station on Feeling Heisen and Evergreen Avenue in Newark. We had to borrow money from Bonnie's mother and my father. And Bonnie worked and I worked, and we paid my mother and father, and we paid her mother back for the amount of money that we borrowed. And I stayed in that station for a good many years, and we were going to the National Guard also. We were both in the Guard, and we tried to get separated 1 week, 2 weeks he would go and 2 weeks I would go, but it didn't work out, and I had to leave the National Guard. So rather than leave the National Guard, I transferred into another unit up in West Mountain Reservation. And I went there and I was in the National Guard for a long time. Eddie and I were in business for quite a few years, and then we saw different things in different ways, and we couldn't get along anymore as partners sometimes do. And I said, either you buy me out or I'll buy you out. So Eddie said, I'll buy you out. I said, fine. So Eddie bought me out. After that, I had no job. I was married. I had a little girl named Audrey, and then I had a little girl named Donna. So I went to work for O'Mara Trucking. When I was in a gas station, I learned how to drive a tractor trailer. And at that time, you didn't need to have a CDL. So I went to work, but the thing was with O'Mara Trucking, who trucked for A&T, you had to shape up every day. And I shaped up every day. And I couldn't earn enough money to support a family. When we moved from Bonnie and I have to go back. When Bonnie and I got married, we lived in a house on a third floor on Maple Avenue in Newark. And the place was so small, it had a bedroom and a kitchen and a bathroom on a third floor. Bonnie had to sit on one side of the table, and I had to sit on the other side of the table. And the table folded down, and we had to put the table up. So Bonnie sat on one side, I sat on the other, and we had a two-stove burner to cook on. And Bonnie was pregnant with our first child, Audrey. And the people downstairs would supply the heat, and they sat in the house with coats on, and they never had the heat up. I complained to the landlord to no avail. So I said, with you being pregnant and a child coming, we have to look for something else. So we looked for something else, and we moved to Hobson Street in Newark, right behind Weak Wake High School. And that's where we had Audrey, and then we had Donna. And we lived there for many years. I had the gas station on Feeling Heights and Avenue, and then when I left Feeling Heights and Avenue and was working for O'Mara Trucking, and it wasn't enough, I heard about a gas station on Lyons Avenue and Schley Street. And I approached my brother, who's 10 years younger than I, and asked him if he wanted to go into business with me on Lyons and Schley. And Richie had been working for me on Feeling Ice at Avenue, and he liked the business. So Richie went into business. He borrowed money from my father, and like I and Bonnie, had paid my father back in full through the business as we earned money on Lyons and Schley. And we were doing very well. And also, I used to like to ride motorcycles. And I would go home from lunch because it was like three blocks away from the gas station. So I'd jump on a motorcycle and ride. And if Bonnie was in the street with the girls, she'd duck into a store because she never wanted anybody to know that her husband was riding a motorcycle if I would holler, "Hi, Bonnie," because Bonnie did not want anybody to see her husband riding a motorcycle that she was saying hello to. And I'd go home, eat my lunch, then go back to work. And I stayed in the National Guard for about 10 years. And then I left the National Guard because it got too much with having two children, having a gas station, having to leave my brother in a gas station by himself. Also, going back in my memory, I would like to stop here and regress back to When I was living at home at 363 North 12th Street, and then moving to Wainwright Street, my parents wanted me to go to Hebrew school. And there wasn't any Hebrew school that would take me. So my Aunt Essie, who lived in Pleasantdale, had a rabbi named Moseson, who said that he would teach me privately so I could make a bar mitzvah up in a synagogue in West Orange. He taught me, and I made my bar mitzvah up in West Orange. Also, my Aunt Essie and Uncle Harry had a home in West Orange, and all through the years that I was going to Hebrew school and going to West Orange, I would cut their grass for extra money. When I cut their grass, my Uncle Harry had a brother, George Sasson, who lived directly in back of him, and their lawns were connected to one another. I would cut his lawn and George's lawn, and I would have money that I could spend on anything that I wanted. I always had a job, always doing something when I was younger. Also, at that age, when I was, after I made bar mitzvah, and we were living at 147 Wainwright Street, I got a job with Good Humor. And I used to pedal a bike from Springfield Avenue to the Weequake section, up and down hills, pumping that bike and selling ice cream. And I made a pretty good dollar doing that job. But it also raised havoc with my knees. Getting back to the gas station on Lyons and Schley, I bought a tow truck, and we went into the towing repair business, and we had a towing and repair business, and was there for a good many years. And then came the riots in Newark. And during the riots, we went through heck in Newark. We had to pack up all our stuff and bring it down to Edison, where we had moved, because we moved from Hobson Street with the girls, because my wife found a house in Edison, New Jersey on Marlin Avenue. When she took me to see this house in Marlin Avenue in Edison, I said, "Where are you taking me? I'm a city boy, and this was country. There was all woods in back of us." But she liked the house, and I said, "Okay, if you like that house that much, we'll buy the house." And we bought the house in Edison. And then the riots came, like I said, in Newark, and I had to pack up all the stuff and bring it down to Edison. And we stayed away from the place for about 3-4 days. And then when we came back, things weren't the same. People didn't come back. The people that were moving into the area were very abusive. I had to walk around with a 38, a shoulder holster, because the people used to come in and say, "I'm not going to pay you." So one of the fellas that worked for us, we'd go out in twos. One boy would pump the gas and one stay in front of the car. And they would say, "I ain't going to pay you." Then you whip the gun out, stick it in their face, and then they'd pay you. And they would say, "Oh, that man's got his stuff." Never once would they call the police. We went through a lot of robberies. We went through people stealing all the copper out of the bathrooms. We put the copper back in, they'd steal it again. Then they, Sononko decided, well, we'll put all plastic. They put plastic in. And we weren't given the keys to kids. We were given the keys to adults. There was no rhyme or reason for these people doing what they're doing. But that's the nature of the beast. They also defecated in the trailers that we had. There was no reason for that. There was no way of locking them. But they did that. We opened it up, and there it was. So we had to get rid of the trailers. They pulled the fence, the boards off the fence. They took the signs off the pumps. They cut the air hose. At that time, people would come in and say, where's your air? And I would say the jitterbugs, and that means young people at that time, cut the hose. They understood that. That was not saying, oh, you don't have no hose. Well, the jitterbugs cut it, and that's that. I would have to take the signs off the top of the pumps, because if we didn't take the signs off the top of the pumps, we'd come back in the next day, and there'd be no signs. Consequently, after getting robbed so many times, we decided that we had to get out of there. And we found a place, or I found a place in Edison on Parsonage Road and Route 27. It was Atlantic Richfield. And living down in Edison and still being in Newark, I was always interested in fires. And I joined the Edison Volunteer Fire Company. And I joined a company with Billy Gelfound. We were the two youngest people in the fire company. They taught us about firefighting, taught me how to drive. I liked it very much. I became a lieutenant. I became second lieutenant. I became assistant chief, then chief of the department. And I was chief of the department for 5 years while I was in Edison. And I had the gas station on Route 27 on Parsonage Road. And the only reason that I obtained the gas station on Route 27 and Parsonage Road was that Don Yackel, who was in the fire company, said he knew that the fellas on Route 27 of Parsons Road wanted to sell a gas station. So I said to Richie, let's get out of Newark. We'll go down to Edison. We bought the station in Edison, borrowing money from my father again, because we had the station in Newark. And we had to fulfill our contract in a station in Newark for the simple reason that they wanted a deposit back then. Instead of giving them a cash deposit, I said, I'll buy stock and in Sunoco and give you the stock. And they said, fine. So I purchased stock in Sunoco, which did very well. And they held the stock. So if I forfeited the lease and didn't serve out my time in the lease, I would have forfeited my stock. So we had to leave after we've fulfilled our lease. Richie stayed in Newark, and I ran the station in Edison. And even after us leaving, for Edison, Richie was getting robbed in Newark. However, we stayed there, fulfilled our obligation, and when we were ready to leave, we had all the equipment that we had in Edison. And as it was, people said, oh, we'll come and help you move. Well, come the day to move, and we rented a truck, and it snowed a lot, and nobody showed up. So we had to leave one of the fellows that worked for us on Parsonage Road and 27 in the Atlantic Station, go up to Edison and clean out the station all by ourselves. We put all the stuff in the truck, and we brought it down to Edison, which was a hard job in Newark by ourselves, taking overhead grease equipment down by ourselves, tying ropes, lowering it down, then loading it into the truck. When we got to Edison, I had stopped by the firehouse, and a lot of guys used to hang out there. And I said, fellas, would you give us a hand? There's snow. We have to go up my driveway. We have to unload this truck. And the fellas jumped in their cars and followed us up with the truck. And we got to my garage at 41 Marlin Avenue East. And we unloaded all the stuff in my garage. After that, Richie and I were both in Edison. We still had our tow truck. And we had to pedal the equipment that I had in a garage. But fortunately enough, I was able to sell stuff through distributors, advertising it, and we got rid of everything, the grease equipment, all the extra jacks and horses and tools that we had, we sold off. Then I was able to park the car back in the garage. And I still belong to the fire department. Right now, I have 53 years in the fire department. They don't let me stay active going into fires, but I belong to the department. I could stop traffic, keep people from going into the fire if there's a major fire and I go to the fire. That's basically what I do now. Going back to the days in Parsonage in 27, when I got here, I met this woman, Eleanor Jarris, coming into the station, and I said to her that I'd like to get the police towing for Edison. And she said, I know Tony Alentis, and my mother and I are very good friends with Tony, and we'll go down there and we'll see him and see what he says. So she made an appointment, and Eleanor and myself went down to see Tony Alentis. And lo and behold, we got the towing for the Edison police, and we got on the list. Whenever there was an accident, whether it was 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, we got the job with other fellows. It was a rotating list. During the course of being on Route 27 and Parsonage, and it was right down the street from the firehouse, consequently, I was making like 90% of the fires. I was there all the time. Day, night, holidays, weekends, major fires, I was there. There was a major fire at the Pines Manor that we were second or third due. It's the other side of town. And we went over to the fire. And we started fighting the fire, and we tried to make inside attack. And we were crawling around inside. Robert Campbell, who I put on, and who became paid chief of the Edison Fire Department, not the volunteers. And we were crawling around, and a fire was roaring inside, and it started to make a noise, and the noise was like a freight train, and then you're going to get a backdraft. So we backed out, and sure enough, they got a backdraft, and we lost the building. I fought many fires, big brush fires. There was one great big fire that where the pipeline burst in Durham Woods Apartments. The fire was going through. We were there all night. It was a major fire. It burned down all the apartment buildings. And I was there. I have film of that fire. It was tremendous. The only loss of life was a person that had a heart attack, but we had no other loss of life. We stayed on Parsonage at 27. For 38 years that we're there. It got to be a point in time where Shell took over from ARCO. We went from Atlantic Richfield to ARCO, and ARCO got bought out by Shell. Shell steadily increased our rent to where the rent was $8,000 a month. We worked like dogs, and we earned money to make the rent. Once they pulled the rent, because they took the money out automatically from the checking account, it went all the way down to zero. We worked like dogs all month, and then it went up. I made a conscious decision that after 38 years, we'd have to close up the station. At that point, Richie and I closed up the station. We sold off all the stuff. We sold the tow trucks at a substantial loss. We sold the tools, the equipment at a substantial loss. And then we had to go out and get jobs. Richie got a job delivering tires for BC Tire. And I got a job in security working for Middlesex Tobacco in Perth Amboy for the Katz family. I stayed there for 3 or 4 years. I really enjoyed working for the Katz family. After that, the Katz family went belly up, and one day he came out and said that Morris, this is the last day you'll be working because we're closing up. I was very saddened at that happening to them because they were a very, very nice family, and I enjoyed working there. I left, and I was out of work for a while, and I decided I would stay in security, and I looked in the paper for jobs. And I went to work for a security outfit that worked, that had a contract in Perth Amboy for food company. And I went and I worked for them for about 3 years until the woman that I worked for in security got very abusive. But as it turned out, the company wanted to make a change in personnel because at the post that I worked at, the people would come in and I'd have to look even in the women's bags when they left the premises that they weren't taking anything out or any food out. So they wanted to make a change. Instead of saying, Morris, we want to make a change and we're going to have to put you someplace else, she just got very abusive to me. And I said, okay, I'm leaving. And I went to leave the position and gave notice. And my big mistake was that I gave her written notice. And she used that against me when I tried to collect unemployment. She offered me another job later on, the day before I was ready to leave, and she said she had another post that she could give me in Saraville. So I went to Saraville and I looked, and it was a Middlesex authority, which was a sewage authority. And it smelled there. And I would have to be handling papers and there would maybe be bacteria on that. And I couldn't bring that home because during the course of the time that I had the station and left, Bonnie had a transplant. And we thought that we were going to lose her. And I loved her very much. And she was in the hospital. And she didn't want to get the heart transplant. And I said, oh, please. And I started to cry. And Bonnie said, I'll do it for you. And I really wanted to say, do it for yourself. But as long as she was going to do it, I let her do it. And we went to the hospital the day of the transplant. Well, let me regress. I was going to the hospital while she was there. And she was in ICU. And she used to call me up at night. And I used to run back to the hospital and keep her company, and then come home and was getting much sleep. And then one night, I came home, and a phone rang, and the nurse practitioner said, we have a heart for your wife. Come over. I called Audrey, Donna, Gerald, and Barbara, and we all headed over for the hospital. We got to the hospital, and Bonnie was in the ICU, and they were preparing Bonnie to get the heart transplant. And when Bonnie got the heart transplant, We were there all night, and we saw her before she went in, and Dr. Anderson did the transplant, and we were all very emotional, her going in. And she went in, and they made the transplant, and she did very well. And we were all very happy. And Kevin and Glenn and Donna and Audrey and myself were all at the hospital. And then we were very much relieved. And we couldn't see her till the next day. And then going in to see her the next day, she was in an ICU, and I went in to see her, and when I took a look at her, I cried. I said, what did I put this woman through? I don't know till this day whether I made a mistake or I did good by her getting a transplant and going through all that time. And I want all my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren to know that woman never, ever complained about her hurting or anything else even up to the time that she was passing. She never ever said, I am hurting, I don't feel well. She did well. She was a rock. It was unbelievable that she was a rock. Anyway, I couldn't take the job in Sarasota because of the bacteria. I told the woman that I couldn't take the job, and I couldn't bring home that bacteria. I tried to collect unemployment, and I went on unemployment, and I think I was collecting for 6 months. And she put a stop to it and sued me, and I lost, and I had to pay back unemployment $6,000. No matter what I tried, we got a lawyer, and I couldn't win. And then I stayed home with Bonnie and kept Bonnie company. I didn't work after that. I retired and stayed home and watched my grandchildren grow into wonderful, beautiful men. I get very emotional when I say that. But Bonnie and I loved them very deeply. We had a great time when they were younger. We watched when they came over to the house, when the girls would go away. I watched Glenn go into his father's business. I watched Kevin go into business and do very well. I saw Kevin buy his first house in Wetutchen. I saw Don and Glenn buy their first house. And I used to go up to Don and Glenn's, and we were painting the house for them to move in. That was their first house. And we were having a good time, and Bonnie was doing well. And then I think I'm going to end it now because I'm getting a little emotional. And I'll pick it up from there.